to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Satellite Aloft, Sirius Satellite Radio, Sirius XM. I think when we first added this to Satellite Aloft, it was just Sirius. before the merge. Dick Powell going to join us and do some recap from last night, the two-year-old stake at Presque Isle. But, of course, now everybody was left after... You know, after we were going out for the break, everybody was waiting for Dick to join us to find out if Dick has a middle name.
Yes, I do.
Well?
Well, you didn't ask me what your middle name is. You asked me, do I have a
What is it? We're all excited. First of all, you were obviously born a Richard, right? Richard?
Yes, James.
Okay. Richard James, RJ.
After my Uncle Jim. So, yep.
Were you RJ as a kid?
No, oh no, I was Dickie my whole life.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. No, the only people that called me Richie were the nuns.
Or RJ. I like RJ. That's a natural.
That's not the neighborhood I grew up in.
That's pretty good.
The Catholic, all right. The Catholic nuns called me Richie in school.
Interesting.
I was never Dick in school. And you could always tell if someone knew me back in the day, because it's always Dick or Dickie. And then the other people that might have known me from school was Richie, but that's a long time ago. But yeah, James.
I like it. All right. Well, I may be hard pressed not to say RJ. I like the addition.
Well, what's unusual is Richard James Powell sounds British, and yet. I'm Irish, and my dad was adopted, and so he was adopted by someone named Powell. So my mother's maiden name was Enright, and her mother's maiden name was McMahon, and you know we're hardcore Irish.
Interesting,
but
I'd say
doesn't sound like.
No, I love it. We're very curious.
Well, my mother didn't. My mother didn't tell us that my father was adopted till I was 31 years old. I'm like, you waiting for me to grow up?
That's crazy. That's pretty funny.
That's a generation that kept everything in. And,
yeah.
Didn't talk about a lot of things, including that. There was no big deal, but yeah.
That's a fair point. You're right. That's one thing. That's one thing that has changed in our lifetime. You're right. That's interesting. Well, people know more about you, Dick, than they did 10 minutes ago. So that's always good. I'd like to know more about Lance Stokes, who sent out that weed whacker last night to win the Mrs. Paxson. And, you know, there was that ownership. I assume it was an ownership entry. And we lost, we lost Chili Sky. I made the speculation last night, yesterday, Alexander Levengood had to be part of that triple threat stables. That was the only reason I could see that those two were entry mates.
Yeah, and they had an interview after the race with Lance and the owner, and I missed the beginning of the interview, so they might have covered that. But Weed Whacker, just as Trevor Denman would say, she looks like a winner every step of the way. She was stalking in second, was just racing easily. She'd come off a 5-furlong debut win at odds on, so she 3-1 was a more than generous price on it. And she just took over on the turn and just drew off to win as she pleased. So Lance Stokes is 27% this year. And the rider, Wilder Alencar, he has 40-something wins now at Presque Isle. He had two last night. So he's winning around 20% at Presque Isle. But when you look at his Brit stats, for 2019, he's had 352 mounts, and he still shows a healthy flatbed profit. So not only is he winning, but he's winning with generous odds. So that is a nice combination to get a, you know, an $8 horse across the line without a lot of effort, because I didn't think she was ever in any. She looked just, the way she was cruising down the backstretch into the turn, she just looked super tough. She did break from the rail, Stephen. While I was sitting there listening to Brad, I was going through the Brit information at the end of every race with the post positions and everything else, and the rail just does extremely well no matter what the distance at Presque Isle. Presque Isle is more of a speed track than people realize. They think synthetic is slow and tiring and favors closing and stuff, and that's not the case in sprints especially. But other than 6.5 furlongs, where it just doesn't have a big advantage, the other races, it certainly has a big advantage. So if you get out, especially from an inside, it doesn't have to be the rail, but 1, 2, 3, you're going to be very tough. So Weed Whacker wins the Mrs. Paxton, nice two-row filly by Artie Schiller. And we'll hear from her again.
It was a step up performance, and what was interesting about this field, I went over this race at the end of the show yesterday, and I asked the question about Capital Q down inside for Robert Mosco coming in from Philadelphia, and Eddie Coletti coming in as well with Lula's Roadrunner, making the move from dirt over to the synthetic, and they both ran okay. Lulu's Roadrunner, basically was chasing the whole way and was able to be well clear for third, and that Capital Q broke well and then got swamped, ended up fourth in here, and I'm not so convinced that she wants too much of the synthetic. I mean, sometimes you see them, when they back up like that. I mean, it did go fast, so you don't know. But it's one of those things where you're not so sure that the footing was for her. I mean, they break well, and they might tire just because the action is different. It takes a different kind of toll on them. And then she might not have been good enough either. So it was a good race.
Yeah, it was. And the field, other than the other part of the entry scratching, all eight ran. All eight betting interests ran. So we had a nice complement of horses that seemed to be evenly matched until they sprung the latch. And Weed Whacker just seized the race going into the far turn and just never looked back.
Well, the counterpart doesn't come up for a couple of weeks, right? For the Paxton, the Fitz Dixon.
Yes, that's usually closing weekend, I believe.
Okay,
I have to look that up. But yeah, that's later. That's later in the meet, and PA Breds have had a terrific success, and I'm sure this filly will work her way up through the ranks, and then. They'll try open company somewhere along the line, and PA Breds have done very well.
Well, and we're gonna actually. It's funny you bring up the PA side specifically too, because Stu Kirschenbaum, who I've known via telephone and email for years, I actually got to see and meet Stu face to face, and on Saturday at Parks. And he's going to visit. We're going to talk about around the time the Timonium sale. I want him to come on, because the Pennsylvania, and we even said this when the Jockey Club fact book came out, and the report of Mare's Bread. Pennsylvania is bucking industry trends, and we're going to talk about that with Stu, who has been working with the Pennsylvania breeders you know, for several years. And, you know, the parade of, you hear the commercial, you know, with Brian Sanfratello, the parade of champions, you know, because you just, you don't immediately, when you think of non-Kentucky programs, you know, obviously Florida first, and then New York, and, you know, it's Pennsylvania that's had this, you know, steady drumbeat of top graded stake winning horses the last, you know, the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I think I told you I sat with Stu at the Whitney this year.
Oh, nice.
And he came up with Todd Mostella, who Todd sponsors my appearance, yeah, from the Pennsylvania HBPA. And I've known Stu. I hadn't seen him in 20-25 years, but I remember Stu way back with, involved with Tom Merritt at Thoroughbred Racing Communications and stuff like that. So he, ironically, he sat next to me, and we got to catch up on a lot of things. And he does terrific work with his video advertising.
Videography. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Well, and I want to mention, too, Lance Stokes, you want to talk about regional fillies. It's something we could bring up with Lance. He had, years ago, he had Cover Gal, that very good Calbred, that won, you know, won graded stakes and won and competed at a high level. You know, didn't have a, you know, didn't have the longest career, but made a lot of money and was a, you know, was a serious horse. And that's the horse I associate with Lance Stokes going back. God, it's got to be more than 10 years, probably.
But it was a good race. I did watch all the Parks races on Saturday, and I enjoyed that. I thought King Jack was
tremendous.
108 and 4 on that track. I mean, the first 2-year-old 7 furlong race won in 27. Next one won 25 and change. So, and visually, it just looked like your typical Parks track where, the farther out you are in the stretch, the better chance you have. The King Jack and only his fourth start for him to do that. I mean, the other sprinters, if he goes to the Breeders' Cup, the other sprinters he's going to face have already shown what they can do, and he still seems to have some upside to him.
He's not limited to sprint distance either. I mean, that's the most interesting thing about him.
He ran well in Shared Belief behind Improbable, yeah, going a mile. And yeah. What the other unfortunate and interesting part of this is Cherry Holland off the train. Breeders' Cup is at Santa Anita. Does that band count during the Breeders' Cup?
That'll remain to be seen. I would imagine, and Jerry wasn't going to speculate on that right now, but I would imagine Craig Fravel and his presence has a lot to bear on that front, and yep, whether the horse would have to run in Dan Ward's name and et cetera, but you would like to believe, coming out of that litigation at Golden Gate, where the judge asked the parties to work things out themselves, hopefully some of that is happening, and we'll see if, you know, if we'll see what kind of an update there might be on that front, as we get, you know, as we get into October, and frankly, as we get to, you know, to next week. From every indication, I mean, Jerry Hollendorfer seems prepared to, you know, to not compete there if that's what is going to continue to be the situation. So we'll see.
Well, the funny thing with King Jack is he looks like he has this big, wide strip down his face, and it looks like a highway, you know, the machine that puts the white line down. Because it's just, you know, some horses have different shapes and looks sure, like a question mark. This is like straight white right down to his nose. It's pretty cool. And seeing him, you know, when they brought him back after the race, I mean, he's a handful. Now, that race certainly didn't take a lot out of him.
No, he's a very, well, McGreevy, Tom McGreevy, who I talked to afterward, McGreevy picked him out, of course, for Michael Stinson. And, McGreevy really, really thinks highly of him and did from word go. And they're very excited about what, you know, what is yet to come for King Jack. So yeah, you can understand after that performance, you understood pretty clearly why there was interest for a while of coming to the Allen Jurkins, and that, you know, that Hollendorfer thought about, you know, coming to Saratoga with him when you saw that effort. So and their long-term goal actually is more the Malibu even than Breeders' Cup. So
that'd be perfect.
That's what their thought is. But then again, you have to deal with the ridiculous circumstance involving the Stronach group. Dick, couple of thoughts about this afternoon and this evening at Presque?
Well, what's happened is the trainer races Jerry Brooks all the way, no problem there. The jock race has suddenly been flipped. And Pablo Morales, as of Thursday, was one ahead of Gallardo. And then last night, Morales has a four-bagger. So he's now five ahead of Gallardo. Same thing as always, 126 to 121, 94 seconds to 94 seconds, 73rds to 69 thirds, 27% for each rider. But Morales has made up quite a bit of ground and now has taken the lead against Gallardo. Then this huge drop off, the third place rider, Scott Speed, is 51. So that's two guys dominating Prescott racing. Tonight we're gonna try to get home a chalky pick three in race number two. Gonna kick it off with number three, the two Nancys from Tim Girton. Five claimer. She's taken a real home to Prescott Isle since coming there. A win and a second last time out. Draws towards the inside, which we like, and Pablo Morales back aboard, picks up the mount. They have Ronnie Allen had it last time. Morales rode it to victory before that, so we get Morales. 35% with Girton. Lots of things to like about number three, the two Nancys. Second leg will be race four. We're going to go with the five, either Blyton or Blitchton. I think it's Blyton. Horse for Course won 12 times here. 8-year-old, still firing bullets. I mean, has earned $54,000. Runs against 12-5. This one's 13-5. Just no one claims him, and he just keeps winning. So even though he's back on a short rest, he was pretty dominant last week from the inside. And the aforementioned Wilba Allen Carl will be back. So that's number five, Blyton, in the second leg. And then in the third leg, which is race four, this one's going to be a little bit tougher. Red Starlet breaks from the inside. Packed it in last time a couple of weeks ago, but does have terrific early speed. We're going two turns. We get Gallardo back. Little drop in class, not really much. But I think this one is clearly the one to catch. And with Gallardo's ability to get horses out and then relax and nurse that speed, hopefully we can get it done. So the pick three tonight, starting in race number two, 3-5-1.
3-5-1. Punch it up a few times. Next 3 days, today, tomorrow, and Thursday, some nice sequences, particularly the second half of the cards. You've got looking ahead, you know, things like the pick five, eight by seven by nine by eight by twelve on Thursday. Looks like 8 by 7 by 8 by 9 by 12. You know, I had that conversation last week with Doug Salvatore too, Dick, and you know, Doug said a lot of the same things you have talked about, which is just how consistent and how playable this, you know, this surface is. I mean, it in an old school way, with you know, horses running on a regular basis, very familiar and very distinct. You know, it's not you know, the when you think quality wise. I mean, if you're somebody that looks down your nose at you know, 62.5 types, I guess. But you know, if you want horses that, you know, that are pretty consistent, you know, Brad Free years ago, I expressed that, you know, sometimes I would be intimidated by you know, the lower levels. And Brad said, you know, don't be. Those are horses that a lot of times are as formful as any division, any area of racing.
Yeah, and like you said, the great thing is that they come back on short notice. So, you know, the Blight and Tonight ran last week, won last week, right back 7 days later. You know, you see that very frequently. 3-4 weeks is getting to layoff status. Usually they're back 2-3 weeks. So you get familiar names running back on a surface that they're familiar with. And, you know, if a horse doesn't like the surface, he's probably not going to be here. But then you get these great horses for courses, like the one in tonight with 12 wins. That's not that unusual. You see a lot of horses like that.
Yep.
And well, it's fun, and little nuances in the racing surface with, you know, inside doing well and speed doing better than people think. Lots of little angles to play.
Yeah, where these are horses that are racing instead of training constantly between starts. They're just racing, and we've talked about that surface and how good it is for the horses. Let's look forward to Thursday, Dick, and we'll talk Hong Kong with you later in the week. I appreciate it.
Okay. Will do.
Dick Powell, everybody. Presque Isle tonight, 5:35. We're going to take a break here. Andy Serling standing by. Talk to Andy next. A little bit. Maya Engelhart. Jorge Duarte. John White. At the races. Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey!
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't you wanna tell me your name? Feels like you got a lot to say. See you looking my way. Been waiting for you all day.
Telling we're back at the races. Andy's been waiting for us to call, and here we are. Brad Cox and Dick Powell visits. Coming off of a nice weekend in New York, a little warm everywhere, as we told you from our trip to Philadelphia. I think things are moderating for this week and starting to look forward to the big Breeders' Cup preps that start this weekend, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, with a serious group of 5 classic types. Andy, good morning.
I think there's 6 in the Gold Cup, Steve. What about Yoshida?
Andrew was iffy on Yoshida.
Okay.
Talked to him this morning, and he
why'd you call Bill Mott?
Well, all right, good point. We could add Yoshida, which would be fun. That would frankly, the five are terrific, and if Yoshida's coming, it's that much better.
Okay. If you say so.
Well, come on, you can't. What's wrong with that group?
But they're all good. I'm not knocking them. You know, five worst fields aren't exactly compelling, but okay, it's a good five. I'm not going to argue with that.
Well, and you get the 3 year olds. You know, this is always the most important part of this time of year. It's supposed to be is the 3 year olds starting to face elders, and so Code of Honor and Tacitus's presence in here, you know, really adds to the intrigue.
Yes, for sure. Listen, I'm old, so I remember when 3 year olds before the Breeders' Cup came along and made it so 3 year olds never faced olders in the fall. You know, they used to run against them all the time. They used to beat them when dinosaurs and fast horses roamed the earth in those old days. So yeah, and I'm glad to see that Tacitus and Code of Honor are running in this meaningful race, as opposed to meaningless races.
The mile and a quarter and you know, running 2 mile and a quarter races back to back, as opposed to, you know, what's offered in a race like that awesome again out in California, the mile
well,
and
actually
eighth.
It's three, right? It's the Travers, the Jockey Club, and the Breeders'
That's
Club.
That's true.
And the point, your point being?
I think there's some training mentality that, you know, that prefers, you know, the mile and the eighth and then, you know, moving to the mile and a quarter as the,
well,
you know.
Since Chip McGay and Bill Mott seem to not conceive it, see if there's a big problem, I'm going to say it's probably okay. Those guys are pretty good, right? They
absolutely
won a lot of big races between the two of them. So if they think it's fine, I'm good with it.
Well, Preservationist, Tacitus, Code of Honor, Tenfold, Vino Rosso, and potentially Yoshida for the Jockey Club Gold Cup on Saturday. And we'll have the Pilgrim and the Beldame. We had a visit with Brad Cox. He's contributing. In fact, all the three trainers that are going to be on today, Eddie, have got horses lining up in that Pilgrim, it looks like. Jorge Duarte, Brad Cox, and we'll talk to Maya Engelhart after you.
Ask Jeremiah if he's playing a rating tuggle again. All inquiring minds want to know.
we'll get that information from Maya. Well, and speaking of which, let's use before we talk about what lies ahead, because it's going to be two, you know, terrific weeks lining up with everything Breeders' Cup prep.
Are you coming down?
Not Saturday, probably the following, next weekend.
Okay. I've got $20 says you don't come.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I'm going to come considering we've got two horses pointing for that.
I still don't believe you'll be there.
Okay. I might be there tomorrow, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I might come down tomorrow. Tina's got something.
I bet you don't.
Okay, very good.
You never come. You always say you might come. You never come.
Well, I do live 3.5 hours away, and
you're down in Parks. That's like 6 hours away. You were there.
Well, that
you
was
go
2 days. I was there 48. I was there for 48 hours.
You can cock in some eye story to not even come to track.
Yeah, I tell you what, you should see what I'm seeing through this eye right now.
I thought you were better by now. Aren't you better?
I'm better, but this gas bubble. They put this gas bubble inside, and so
I know
now,
we've discussed this.
Well, but no, but there's a whole new development, which is the thing is breaking up. So now through my eye, there's literally a kaleidoscope of like seven bubbles, and when I turn my head,
don't turn on MSNBC then.
It's ridiculous. What this is? This has been it literally. When I tell you, like a kaleidoscope. If when I look down in particular, and the thing comes up, there's like six or seven different shapes that are at large in there. It's crazy. Speaking of Maya Engelhart, a couple of thoughts, because Maya had a really nice win in the Kelso for Harold Lerner, and what a nice horse this pat on the back has been.
I agree. He really ran his, I would say he ran his best race ever. It was a very good effort by him. I agree. I did not like him. I'm surprised. He ran really well in there. Yeah, he's done very, very well, and Jeremiah's done a great job with him. What's he going to do with him? Is he going to try to go to the Breeders' Cup with him? Or is he going to stay and run him in the New York Red Race? Do you know?
I'll find out. We'll ask him that question, too.
Oh, okay. Kelso, is the Kelso a winning year in?
The count for the mile?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think so. You would have seen the blanket and the hats and the whole Purple Army
I wasn't paying enough attention to see that, to be honest with you. So.
Well, pat on the back and Dylan Davis together.
No, he ran well. I agree. Sorry, I don't have any great words of wisdom on that one.
Nah. You know what's interesting? This makes him a millionaire. He's by congrats. He's a horse. He is not a gelding. And this is an important win for him. If he can...
you have to get a grade one to be
relevant.
I'm sure they're pointing towards the Cigar Mile. The question is, are they going to have a race in between? But I'm sure they're pointing to that again. They ran fifth in the Cigar last year.
But he ended up with a 103 buyer, too.
Yep. Career best. I don't think he'd ever run a digital buyer.
He hadn't. Yeah. He had not. 99 had been his top.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he ran well. I agree.
And I didn't realize this either until I just looked down. He's never been off the board at Belmont, Andy, in 11 starts. 6-3-2 in 11 starts at Belmont.
A very consistent horse. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I find all that, racetrack, course for course stuff to be tiresome because I don't believe it means anything. But he's probably done a lot of his racing at Belmont, right?
He really has, yeah. 11 of 26 starts.
Yeah. I mean, that's his career record. He's probably hit the board an awful lot of them. The thing is, he started his career, he wasn't as good. So by the time he started racing at Belmont is when he started getting good, right? Wasn't his first... He won a race at Finger Lakes as a two-year-old, and I have a feeling he ran second in the Sleepy Hollow, right? Does that sound right?
It does sound right, and that's when McPeak had him, right? McPeak had him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he upset somebody at like 10-1 in a small field at Finger Lakes in like a four-horse field. I think Dylan rode him for McPeak in like his third start. After Saratoga, I'll look it up. I'll get up off my...
As you do that, too, a couple other notes within this group. And the race was bet.
I had a good opinion of that race. I like the horse that ran last.
Well, Monongahela, I mean, just you saw him drop anchor down
pick.
On the inside.
He's a terrible pick.
Did not.
I make a few of them.
Listen, we all do.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
Prince Lucky got bet like he couldn't lose.
No, what was he? What price was he?
Even money. 6-5.
Was he really that short?
Yeah.
That was a ridiculous price. I agree. So, yeah, he ran start over twice. Oh, he broke his main second start. I bet him, right? Yeah, I remember that now. He was 5-1. I remember that. Then the Aspirin, he won by his nose, was 5-1. He beat Macho Maya. And then he was second in the Bond Guard. And he won the Sleepy Hollow with 20-1. There we go. He was second in the... It's weird that he was 20-1 in that race. I went, oh, it's so short. Goldberg King ran third. Why was he such a big price that day? You know, it's funny he was in this race. Favorite was Mr. Goldberg King, but he's only 281. Mr. Buff ran fourth.
Huh.
All Anchor was in there. Runaway Loot was in there. I wonder why he was such a big price in there. Tell me a kooky story in a second. I think that's who I bet. I think. I'm not sure. Can't remember. It was a long time ago. It was 3 years ago. Yeah. My brother's made at Saratoga, right? Wasn't that Finger Lakes race? Then he went to the Delta Jackpot. I forgot that. He went to Fairgrounds to get him ready for the Derby. That worked out well. Third to Mike Lee. And then one at Finger Lakes. So he started to consistently get good. It wasn't until last year, really. It wasn't really until last year that he got good.
Yeah, last spring.
And then actually a lot of it coincided when he switched to Jeremiah. But he ran well in his last start for McPeak.
Exactly.
The, firm success.
Yes.
But then once he got to Maya, he started really consistently running big numbers. But to be fair, he ran the big number in his first start as a four-year-old for McPeak. So maybe he just got better with age.
You look at that breeding, you know, by congrats out of an awesome again mare. He had every right to start to get good at four as a full, you know, as he got closer to maturity.
Well, I think most horses do, right? Very few horses peak at two.
There's precocity. There's precocious.
No, I know. I'll tell you a horse that I firmly believe virtually peaked at two, and I know it'll annoy people, but I don't mean it as a compliment, not a criticism. Songbird. I don't think she ever got perceptibly better. I think she was an amazing two-year-old. And she was so good that she continued to be a very good horse in a not a particularly strong group. But she was a two-year-old. She just towered over a competition, right? She was so good. I mean, her speed figures didn't really perceptibly increase, did they, from two to three to four?
Nope. It plateaued.
I think she was such a good two-year-old, and because the competition was so inferior as a three-year-old, she continued to dominate them, that I don't think the people noticed that she didn't improve that much. Because I think if she improved from two to three, she really would have been, you know, incredible. But I don't think she did. I mean, you think of her Breeders' Cup. It was an incredible race she ran. It's a two-year-old, you know, the Breeders' Cup race she won. She was remarkable.
No, fair. Half-bridled. Half-bridled never got better.
Right. Half-bridled even win much as a three-year-old? She went at least in the spring, you know, in California. Yeah, she had some. Didn't she have, like, post-14 in the
Juvenile
Fillies?
Yeah, she did. She sure did. You got it. Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, she was good. She was really good. Yeah, listen, it happens sometimes. But most of the time, they're going to, you know, unfortunately, we don't get to see some of these horses run. So do we think Omaha Beach is really going to run?
I don't know. I really don't know.
So what are they going to use? I guess if they're going to run them in if they're really going to run them at 6 furlongs, if I believe when I see it, that gets their point for the mile. They're not going from the 6 furlong prep to the mile and a quarter. They can't do that.
I wouldn't think so. But
make any sense? Sort of weird.
Yeah,
these horses are like Godot, right?
Yeah.
Maximum Security. Now I read somewhere that he can't get him to the Breeders' Cup. He's thinking of the Clark. Godot is going to show up before he runs again.
Well, you got to ease him back in. They're just like
Of course. I mean, he obviously had a serious incident, but he is not exactly a horse that's been reliable as to when he was going to race to begin with. You know, it's not his sort of career trajectory has not exactly been orthodox, for better or worse.
You know who's been reliable?
Who's been reliable? You, Steve. You're reliable.
55 and Dot Matrix, significant form. Let's get a couple other recaps in here before we talk about.
Significant form's a funny horse because, you know, when I was looking at the, I'm not going to gloat over being right about a 6-5 shot, but that's not really what I'm trying to do here. when I was first looking at that Noble Damsel, I found it to be very confusing. And the more I looked at Significant Form, she's a funny horse because the three-year-olds don't have mile races, the three-year-old fillies. Now, we moved the Lake George to a mile this year, which I think is a good start. But what happened to her, you know, she was such a good two-year-old. She probably should have been second in the Breeders' Cup. She wasn't going to beat Rushing Ball. I don't think that's really an embarrassment, not being able to beat Rushing Ball, right? So I think that they ran her in the right, wrong races as a three-year-old. I mean, what are you supposed to do with a horse that looks like a top three-year-old? You get her ready for the Belmont Oaks, you know, obviously before we have these series of three races. And so he ran her in the Wonder again, and they ran her in there. But the truth is, she's not a 9 furlong or 10 furlong horse. And she ran incredibly. She ran second to La Signara, who was very good at the time. And then, you know, she didn't run terribly in the Oaks. I think she was fourth. But she couldn't get the distance. She's really a miler. And there's just nowhere to really run her, right? And then I think she got a yielding turf or something at Saratoga. She didn't run well. And then she had that off-the-turf race. So essentially her three-year-old year was a complete waste. But this year, you know, he ran her in the Intercontinental, and she ran very well that day. And then I think they took a shot and ran her 5.5 because there really weren't races for her at Saratoga. I guess he could have pointed for the Della Rose, right? But wouldn't have mattered because she wasn't going to beat Cassie's horse anyway. But it's kind of once she started running in the right races, she started showing what she can do. And even though she got this great ride to win the Boston Spa, she's really not a two-turn mile 16th horse, and she still won. I think she showed on Saturday that these mile races are what she wants, especially one-turn mile. And she ran the best race she's ever run, getting a 99 buyer, and I think this is where she belongs. And if she's able to keep that form, you know, Chad Brown has had very good success in the Matriarch. He lost by a nose to Miss Temple City 3 years ago, and then he's won it the last 2 years with Off Limits, who won the Noble Damsel, and Uni, who won the Noble Damsel as well. And Significant Form might be this year's horse form. You'd have to think of that race. Yeah. But I don't know where Rushing Fall is, right? She missed the Boston Spa. And I haven't asked Chad Brown. I have no idea. Maybe hopefully she's doing fine, or she's going to run a race like the First Lady at Keeneland. I have absolutely no idea if she's running or she's out. Have you heard anything about her?
No.
Because First Lady is a funny race, right? Because I kind of doubt that Mark is going to bring back Got Stormy after, you know, 3 weeks from Woodbine. So I guess it's Beau Recall and that group, right? Beau Recall's pretty good, actually.
He's got, I just had Brad, and he's got both, Beau Recall and Juliet Foxtrot in the First Lady.
Right. Beau Recall's good. I guess in the absence of that Stormy and Rushing Fall, she's probably favored in there, I would guess. Not that familiar. I don't know if and who Chad Brown has for it. I can't imagine he's coming back in 3 weeks with Significant Form. So, but I think Significant Form's really improved a lot. And 55, just, I don't think 55's been as good this year, though she ran well in the Boston Spa. And she's just lost those horses around, especially when the other horse at Gallagate. And I'm not sure why Dot Matrix was such a big price in the
Agreed.
I mean, I didn't pick him. I picked him last time, and he was better than, what's his name, than Offering Plan, because he got left last time. I mean, obviously, Gucci Factor didn't get out of the gate. That was very unlucky. He stacked it up at the wrong time. And so we don't know what he would have done. And he could have been close enough. And Voodoo Song ran well, finally, which was nice to see, right? First time he's run a good race in a while, so that was good.
Yes, yeah, because there was some concern, you know, where he stood.
I'd imagine we're going to point him to the what's the stake on the New York Press Showcase Day. I won't be there, actually. The Ticonderoga's for fillies, right?
I never. This drives me crazy. Actually, I got the stakes schedule right in front of me.
Oh, the Mohawk. The Mohawk is the cold race. Yeah.
By the way, I gotta ask you. Somebody, my friend Leslie Knopf, put up a picture of the Native.
I'm not exactly sure why, because I corrected myself in the show and quoted her as being the one who corrected me right after she said it to me on Twitter. So I'm not exactly sure why she reiterated it. But anyway,
The Maid of the Mist.
I correctly thought the Maid of the Mist was the other boat up in Lake George, and you know, what's the word? Conflated one for the other.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, what?
My caveat is that my one trip to Niagara Falls was when I sort of dead there in 1984.
Where'd they play?
Actually, both. They played at the convention center.
It's like a
weird sort of airplane hangar.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of weird. Yeah, actually,
they've added to that.
Actually, I also was there again in. I drove through it that summer because we drove up to Toronto to see the Dead as well. They played at that Wonderland amusement park in downtown Toronto.
Okay.
In 84. Went to Woodbine the following day. Stayed with Sam Elliott on the way up. He was in Rochester at that time.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. I've known Sam a long time. Yeah. With my friend Mark. Went to the City Island Dead show and drove to Saratoga where they played there the next night.
Now that's a swing.
You know, Toronto to Harrisburg wasn't that far. Stop in Rochester. It's not really that big a deal.
No, it's a great
Harrisburg Saratoga drive's a little annoying. I remember we saw a deer sleeping in the road. You know what's that road that goes from Binghamton to Albany, 88? Is that
88,
that road?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's never any traffic on it, right? The deer are always very comfortable sleeping on it.
You on the New York highway system and deer don't have a good history.
Well, we didn't hit and kill that one.
You let that one sleep?
One deer runs into your car, and suddenly you're like...
the deer slayer.
Right. Actually, my dad and I hit a deer when I was a kid in New Jersey.
Your daddy bumped.
I was not driving at the time. Yeah, destroyed the front end of our station wagon.
I've only hit one, and all the times I've lived in places where they're a hazard.
I mean, where you live?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird that the one that I hit was in, you know, early afternoon on the thruway, and that's pretty unusual, you know?
Yes.
You know, back roads like where you live, you'd think it would be easier to hit them, but maybe not.
No, they're, and Tina's, she's got a great sense because she knows where you always
have
to
worry.
Great
sense. She married you.
But I'm bummed. Wherever there's bodies of water, they're always crossing roads because they're looking for water.
Well, you would think around that drive from Cerro Skylarville could be a little dangerous, right?
They're all, every nook and cranny around here is dangerous. They are the most annoying, awful things. They just, they're ridiculous.
When I worked downtown, I worked for somebody, he's very left-wing, environmentally conscious, and, you know, really, really outspoken, everything. And this is years ago. This is, you know, early 90s. And I remember one of our brokers was a hunter. And he said to me, I'm going hunting this weekend. Do you want some venison? Do you or your boss? And I'm not going to say his name. It doesn't really matter. But want any venison? And I said, why don't you ask him yourself? Figuring, you're going to get some lecture. Well, I said, I'd love some. And I said to him, what? You're like, okay, with killing Bambi? He's like those lime-infested deer. deer that are overrunning your state. I went, okay. I just never do. I never got it right.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's
funny.
Have you ever, over the years, did you ever drive through the Saratoga battlefield?
Oh, sure, of course. My mom just went there. My brother was visiting. My mom, they just went there. But I've been there many times, sure.
If you go there at dusk, close to dusk, they literally overrun the place because it's like they know that hunters can't go there. So it's like a congregation. They're
everywhere. Haven't we had them in the infield in Saratoga before? I'm sure I've seen them on the infield
in
Saratoga one time or another.
Well, we had that one that was a moose. There was the moose that was looking for a season pass that year. Remember last couple of summers ago, the moose at the
front Woody
gate?
Allen moose joke. You know the Woody Allen.
How did we come to this? That's the greatest.
The Berkowitz.
Yes.
highly recommend that the listeners somehow find the Woody Allen nightclub years. Find the moose story. really is a great story. Anyway, you can find moose around town in Saratoga. I mean, you'll see them randomly in streets sometimes.
We had one here in Greenwich. Cambridge has had them. When they come for, they come for the season when they're in heat, and they're humping VWs. I mean, they're.
All right. Well, this conversation is taking quite a
We left the rails. A quick.
Who's your next guest? Who's the lucky person to follow this crap?
Maya Engelhart. But
he's got to have a lot of deer stories. He's like the Jeremiah Johnson of the training community.
Pretty much. That's really true. You know, I'm going to send you a picture he sent me, which you will fall over because. I made
is
the
a picture
note
of wearing the yarmulke. I have
yes, the yarmulke shot.
I have that picture. He sent it.
Oh my God!
I want to know why he doesn't send him. I mean, he's got more horses because of Al Gold with Hebrew names than any trainer ever, right?
Well, he says Al. He says Al's converted him. Al's turned him over. He's
turned him to what?
What quick thoughts about the Cotillion and Pennsylvania Derby?
I thought that the Cotillion was a really good race. I thought Garrano ran extremely well in defeat, but Streetman's a really good horse. I said this beforehand, so I can say it after. I said on Twitter, I don't understand why I thought Streetman was the only other horse in the race. So I'm not surprised she won. I mean, I think she ran very well in Iowa. I flirted with picking her in the Alabama. I think I picked her second, as it turned out, because she ran the second-best race probably of anybody. She's good, and she got the right setup, right? Of the horses that could win, she was the only one that didn't need to be forwardly placed. And as it turned out, being forwardly placed was not a particularly good place to be because they were moving in that race. I think Garrano ran extremely well in defeat. I don't think she lost anything in defeat, but Streetman's good. I thought it was a terrific race. I thought the Pennsylvania Derby was a very ugly race. I think a lot of horses ran poorly in there. You know, my general theme of it is, and I don't think anybody ran well, is that this constantly slow paces and strangling down speed horses is really to their detriment. And I obviously said the race was completely changed when Probable got left. I am certain if Probable had broken cleanly, he would have won. But he's the architect of his own demise. He started acting up before the start. He acted up in the gate, and it's his fault. And that was really his doing. I'm sure it was very frustrating to the connections, and he should have won, and he would have won. But he didn't, and it was his own fault. He wasn't unlucky. He was badly behaved, but... Having said that, this strangling everybody down in the lead. You really going to tell me that if War of Will hadn't been opened up and gone 48-2 or something, that it wouldn't have been a slightly different race? I just don't think it's helping horses that are forward horses, just strangling them down. That was just an ugly race to watch because of the pace and the whole dynamic of bunching fields. Turf racing and dirt racing are very different, and running dirt races like their turf races is not going to produce the same sort of result.
No, very fair.
And I think, if you watch the Cotillion and then the Pennsylvania Derby, there's such efforts in contrast, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's true. And at the same time, when you think about what Serengeti Empress was doing, knowing that if she wanted the lead from down there, she could have had it.
They were moving, though. I mean, in fairness, and I understand. I'm sure Tom wanted to be in front, and Tom would have had her go as fast as she could have been in front. And I know he wasn't happy, with the way things played out. I haven't talked. I heard from shortly after the race, but I haven't had a chance to talk to him. And listen, Tom's a cerebral guy. And one thing about Tom, he believes instead. Tom agrees with me. Tom doesn't rate speed horses. But I'd have to really look again. But they were moving in that race. I'm obviously sorry for him that she didn't run better. I didn't really get her in that race, to be honest. But I see the Bellafina's already correctly. Her connections have smartly said they're cutting back the Breeders' Cup Million Mare Sprint.
Yes.
I have to imagine Tom's going to consider that. If they're running the Breeders' Cup, that's where she'll be. I feel if Garana were to run again this year, that's where she should run. And obviously, Covfefe's going to be, giving people some thought, but you don't run and hide from one horse.
No.
With all due respect to Come Dancing, she's not running figures right now that are going to beat Covfefe if Covfefe runs the race that she ran at Churchill. I think that the one concern I'd have if Covfefe was my horse is the draw. I don't know if Brad thought about this at all, but, the one race, right, she lost at Churchill is when she was the hunted, right, when What's Mia Mischief was hunting her. She's been very effective when she's gotten these outside draws or when she's able to control the situation.
Point.
You know, it's not dissimilar to Mottoli's one loss. And obviously, Mottoli's one loss also to the rail and not being good, but also not coincidentally was the same time or maybe coincidentally that he was down inside and getting forced. And, I love Mottoli. I'm not knocking him. But he, too, has been able to control the narrative from the outside in the races. He's been successful, right? So, I think the draw becomes important for a horse like a Fefty, where if she draws an inside post and she's going to get forced to play the game of others that are fast early, that could be her undoing. Because she's not winning the Breeders' Cup if she runs that race she ran against Mia Mischief. She's probably winning if she runs the races that she ran, certainly in the Miss Preakness in this race, the Dogwood. And I'm not sure if she wins if she runs the test, but she did run well that day.
I brought that up with Brad that she's been she's had two races where she absolutely gutted it out toe to toe, but then she's had the three blowouts and by 8-9 lengths. So there's obviously circumstances that, as you're citing, that play into some of her outcomes.
I think it's true. I would not be critical of Pathy. She's obviously a significant talent. I'm just saying that, listen, anytime, if you have a horse and, if you own a horse, you train a horse, you want that horse to, be in the situation of least resistance, right? You have a closer, you want a fast pace. You have a speed horse, you want no speed. You have a speed horse, you want to draw outside of other speed so you can, you can at least survey the situation. And you can't control, and one thing you can't control is post position. And I think that those are Mottoli and Covfefe are potentially two horses that could draw to their detriment. Potentially. I also think they're two of the better horses in the country. But you have to at some point prove that you can do it under somewhat adverse circumstances, right?
Well, and there's also this crazy equation that no three-year-old filly has won that race. Including Unique Bella.
Which race? Which race?
The Filly and Mare Sprint.
Really?
Yeah.
You really thought that one through?
What?
Who won it last year?
Who did win it last year?
The three-year-old filly.
Oh, did she? Okay, so she
I think she's a three-year-old, right? Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm wrong, and she was a four-year-old. But I think that Mark's horse won last year. Wasn't she a three-year-old? No fillies won a good run. Maybe no three-year-olds won a good run. I don't think anyone will ever confuse last year's running with a good running.
Hold on. Now you got me.
I'm almost sure she was a three-year-old.
Shamrock
Rose. What is that?
Shamrock Rose, right? Is who we're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, because going into Unique Bella.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought she was a three-year-old last year.
Or is she a four-year-old?
I thought she was a four-year-old this year. I could be wrong.
Where has she been, by the way?
Well, she ran slowly. She ran about as slowly as she ran the Breeders' Cup. Unfortunately, she ran races where you had to run faster than she ran on it. The Breeders' Cup filly must quit last year. It was an awful race. Once Bob Baffert's horse didn't run, Marley Freedom, she didn't show up that day. It was a terrible race. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to.
She absolutely was a three-year-old. She was the first three-year-old to win it after.
Okay, I feel that my work is done here.
You've achieved, and this year she's 0-3. The Hurricane Bernie is airing the Madison.
I mean, she is a good horse. I'm sorry, she's a good horse. I don't want to. You know, I have a tendency to be. She's a good horse. She's not. You know.
Well, she became the first one after we had discussed this. This
after 10 runs.
Item. Yeah, it was
who
crazy.
Were the 3-year-old? Who were the 3-year-olds that lost that race at short prices, big boy?
Unique Bella.
Yeah, well, she was the most overbet horse in Breeders' Cup history that day, right?
Unique Bella. There was the year that Kimmel won, right? With the Bromans.
I bet the best recent horse that day.
That was
the third place.
The runner up. Well, the runner up ran a good race.
She did. The third place finisher went down to the inside.
Was that Chad?
Yeah. Dorsey disagreed with me, but he thought I was crazy to love that horse.
And then when...
Not that he didn't think she could win. He just thought I liked her more than I should.
Let me think.
Who was that horse? I think she was a good 2-year... She was a good 3-year-old, and she didn't have a great 4-year-old year, but she had some excuses. Or she ran third. I forget her name.
And who else? In recent vintage that went into this race. I'm just looking here. I got now. Okay, here's some winners. Bar of Gold, Finest City, Wavell Avenue, Judy the Beauty, Groupie Doll twice, Musical Romance.
Judy the Beauty was not a 3-year-old when she won, right?
No, she was older. She was older. That was not.
I remember betting her when she lost the Priorist as the Chief's last Grade One winner. All right, it's almost 11.
I know you.
I'm not getting paid overtime here. Can I go?
You're not getting paid at all. Let me see here. Hold on. Stone-tastic was 3-1 in that race.
Who was Stone-tastic?
Stone-tastic.
Oh, she's the filly that won the Priorist. She was fast, yeah. And then she lost. No, she lost the Prioress. Didn't Stone-tastic lose the Prioress to that? How many years ago was that? 3 years ago?
That's
Stone-tastic won the Prioress.
That's 2014 at San Diego.
Yeah, she won the Prioress. Nick liked her. Tamaro. She paid a big price, I feel like.
Well, that was a strange group. Judy the Beauty, Better Lucky, Thank You Mary Lou, Stone-tastic, Lee Court, Southern Honey, Artemis Agraterra, Sweet Reason.
Artemis Agraterra was a good horse. She was probably a 3-year-old, or was she a 4-year-old?
I think she was a 3-year-old.
She won
that
Grade
year.
One. Is a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, and 4-year-old, right?
I think that's correct.
I think she won the Frisette, and then she won something, and she won the Ballerine. I want to say maybe she may have won a Grade One, a 2, 3, and 4.
She won a bunch. She was terrific for Mike.
She was good. She just had her first foal sold at I believe it was her first foal. She definitely the foal that sold Peter Brandt bought it at Saratoga for $500,000.
You're like a font today.
I was slow. I'm out of the gate, but I
you did. Really you
I just finished reading a book when you called,
yes.
Actually. Doxology. I liked it.
What's next on the reading agenda?
You've got a stack. Tangier. By Kevin Berry.
Excellent.
Speaking of Waiting for Godot. That's probably why I was thinking Waiting for Godot. It's got a Waiting for Godot theme to it. It's kind of... Just came out if you want to read the reviews.
I've got a stack here that...
You don't even read stuff you should read.
I know. It's impossible.
I really got to get back to the big doings, the UN. I don't have any more time with it.
Andy Serling, everybody, with an absolute vintage.